As we're getting to the end of our study here, we've got a couple more lessons left here in this quarter. Hopefully y'all have enjoyed studying the prophets and prophecies as much as I have enjoyed studying them to teach, as well as just studying to sit in others' classes too. Today we're going to look at Daniel, perhaps one of the better known among us. When we talk Daniel, if I suddenly ask, well, everybody can rattle off some facts and details about Daniel. First thing that pops in your mind when you think of Daniel is what? Lion's den. That's the story that's taught to us from a very early age. The book of Daniel is only 12 chapters long. Not a real long book, but I would say for the majority of people, you read the first six chapters and then you stop. The first six chapters are very chronologic, historic. Those are the stories. Those are the lion's den. Those are the statue. Those are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are the stories that we learned more as a kid. But when you get to the chapter 7 and on, then you hit prophecies and bizarre situations and visions, and you kind of just shut down. Well, we're going to go over those and give you a brief introduction, and hopefully it will make a little bit more sense to you. As I enjoy studying these, we like to look at Daniel the man first. Let's look to see what we can find out about Daniel that helps us understand him. Do we know anything about the lineage of Daniel? Do we know who his father was? Scripture doesn't tell us. Daniel is mentioned, as was hopefully mentioned to you in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 14, verse 14. Ezekiel was a contemporary with Daniel. And Ezekiel mentions Daniel with his group of three, along with Job and along with Noah, as faithful men. So it means that probably Ezekiel and Daniel knew each other, or knew each other's works, because they were both in the same geographic area, in the area of Babylon. But they were in different parts of the city. Now again, Babylon is kind of like someone in Lake Worth and someone in Jupiter, maybe both preaching and prophesying, but they don't necessarily always interact all the time. Especially in that day and age, that distance could be a long distance. But we know that they knew of each other's work. As was mentioned also in the class of study of Ezekiel, Ezekiel was taken into captivity out of Jerusalem in the second wave. Daniel was taken out in the very first wave of Babylon when they came into Jerusalem. So he was among the earliest that was taken into captivity. From an early age, and we say early, and we don't know what age it was. It doesn't give us a specific age of when Daniel was recognized. And it talks about in the early verses of Daniel 1, when it talks about these young men that were set apart. How were these young men chosen? The what? Wisdom. They stood out. In other words, these were young men that stood out among all the young men that were taken captive. Why were these young men chosen? What was the purpose of Nebuchadnezzar to take these young men and separate them? What's that? They were going to serve in the king's court. Yes. Was there a... trying to think of another word. I was trying to think of this word. It went blank in my head. I hate that when that happens. A propagandistic reason for Nebuchadnezzar to do this. Was what? PR work. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar had a desire to integrate this nation and these people and convert them over to Babylonian gods, to take them away from their God. And the way to do it is to try to teach the older people? No, they're going to start with the younger ones. And we don't know how old, except I would assume, and my guess, and I haven't read enough in the things to see where scholars' age puts them and everything, but it had to be an age where they stood out intellectually. Now, is a child going to stand out intellectually with wisdom at the age of 6? So you're talking more probably in the teens or even in the 20s. We don't know for sure. But it was something that these were young men that stood out. They weren't old guys like me, but they were young enough that they wanted to integrate them. And we understand then that that's the point in time that he's brought in here. And it mentions specifically only four individuals' names that Daniel mentions here. And what were his three friends' names? Look in verse 6. What were his three friends' names? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We do not remember. You need to put in your focus to try to memorize those names. Those were their Hebrew names. Now, Daniel goes on, and it surprises me, he interacts and uses their Babylonian names. And that's what you look at, you go on to verse 7. The first step of this assimilation program is to rename all these young men. What is integral? Have you ever looked into things of understanding or looked at what the Bible names mean? I know Dan likes to focus on that. I like to look on that too. Do you know what the name Daniel means? God is my judge. Someone's looking at their center column reference. That's good. God is my judge. And what is the part of that name that we know stands at means God? It's the EL. It's the EL. You'll see the EL in so many, Ezekiel, you see the EL in so many names. That's God. Now, look at the names in verse 7 that are given to these four young men. Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You do some historical work and you look at all four of those names have within them the names of Babylonian gods. That's why those names, they weren't just drawn out of a hat. They were given names to take away the god that they were raised with and given a name of the gods that they wanted them to assimilate and be like. Propaganda. This is something we don't always understand, but I mean, years ago when I started looking at this, I said, why do I want to remember their Babylonian names? Even though it sounds, it's a nice mnemonic, it rhymes, it goes along, Shadrach, Meshach, it sounds neat. But those are the names of the Babylonian gods. I'd rather remember Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah because those are names that have God in them. And also, they're the names that were given to them at birth. God blessed these four with what? Look in chapter 1, verse 17. Not just wisdom, knowledge and skill, not just knowledge and skill, in what? In all literature and wisdom. What's that?
Visions and dreams.
Visions and dreams was only given to Daniel. It was a specific extra gift that Daniel got. But all four of them were given this additional extra intellectual knowledge. And it was so great. How great was it? After this three-year period and so forth, in verse 20, how great was their wisdom? 10 times better than the most knowledgeable magicians and astrologers in the land of Babylon. The king, I mean, they stood out, did they not? They were set apart because they were so far above men that were possibly 2 and 3 times their age that had been doing what they've been doing all that time period. God had them special, and he gave them special gifts to make them stand apart. So what was God doing? Think about what God was doing. He knows what Nebuchadnezzar was trying to do, right? Assimilate them and take away God. So by giving them additional knowledge and wisdom, what is God doing? He's counteracting what Nebuchadnezzar is trying to do. He's giving them the ability to understand. I mean, you got to understand, these four young men learned everything there was to know about the literature and knowledge of Babylon. Is it wrong for us to learn literature and knowledge of other beliefs? According to this and what God gave them, no, it's not. I grew up, some of my favorite stories I enjoyed reading were mythology, which were religious beliefs of different nations, Greek, Roman, Hindu, Norse, American, Indian. I enjoyed reading the stories. Did it cause me to sway away and not hold to God? No. It helps me to understand the thought process that was in individuals back then. And just as these four young men needed to know everything about Babylon and its culture and its beliefs, and God gave them that wisdom. God knew the hearts of these four young men, and he knew that they were going to be strong enough to overcome any temptations that were there. And we see that from the stories, how strong they were. God blessed Daniel with interpreting, and we're going to go into the dream here a little bit later because when we look at the prophecies, but God blessed Daniel with interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and it was such that he was promoted. Look in chapter 2 to verse 40 and verse 48, and what was the promotion given to Daniel? Ruler over an entire over the whole province of Babylon, and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. So he was already 10 times greater than all those wise men in his abilities. So Nebuchadnezzar recognized that and put him in that position. And what's the first thing that he does in his position of authority? Promotes his three friends and brings them right up there with him. He's not going to trust the other wise men. He's going to trust the people he knows that believe in God. And therefore, in a political nature here, we find four individuals in high position of political authority in a foreign nation, and their position allows them to have a great influence on this entire nation and bringing God to them. Chapter 3 gives us the story. Well, let's hold on a second. Let's go back to verse 47 in chapter 2. What does Nebuchadnezzar say about Daniel? And actually, more specifically, about Daniel's God. Truly, your God is the God, capital G, of gods, little g. The Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret. Reading in this book, it's integral. It's important for you to see how many times the recognition of Babylonian and Medo-Persian leaders recognized through Daniel how great God is. And their expressions to me stand out as a great faith building, because do we not want people to see how great God is through us? Absolutely. We want to see, we want people to believe and find something different about the God that we believe and trust in and have faith in. Just as Daniel just did what he needed to do. He did what God told him to do and stood out in that way. Chapter 3 gives us the story of the fiery furnace and this Daniel's friends in there. End result on here, look in chapter 3, verse 29, another example here. Nebuchadnezzar. After this situation where these three young men were saved, he says, therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut to pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. This is a Babylonian who wasn't raised on God, who didn't know God, except through these men. Right. He did not believe in the true God. But you have to realize, even the Jews were doing that in Jerusalem, where they were trying to worship the true God and with the feasts and the sacrifices, but they were also making sacrifices to false gods. Nature of man to want to hedge their bets. There is but one God. But the thing they do recognize again and again here is how great this God is above all others. The first part was to recognize, yeah, he gave the credit to Daniel. I agree, but then the wording that Nebuchadnezzar has after that, where he's given the recognition to the God of Daniel, shows that Daniel recognized it wasn't him. He was merely the presenter of the message. But you're right, but the worship is right. I agree with that. He may have tried to, but he didn't write that in his book. That's the only thing we have. But you're right, that is the consistent nature. When heavenly beings, as Dirk mentioned in Revelation, where John wants to bow down to the angel and worship him, and the angel tells him, get up. I'm not the one worthy of being worshipped. Only God is. We have to recognize that Daniel served in his position under five different Babylonian kings. During the reign of five kings. They're not all mentioned in his book. We find Nebuchadnezzar. Was Nebuchadnezzar the first of the Babylonian kings? No, there was one before him, but Nebuchadnezzar is the greatest known because the kingdom was the greatest. Under which king was the greatest as far as the Jewish kingdom? Which one is the best known of them? The first king? Saul? Actually, the best known is David. David, everything in the Bible is of David. Solomon, the kingdom was the greatest geographically and economically, but David was still, even Solomon deferred to his father. So we find this nature here. Nebuchadnezzar was the second king there, and there were two or three kings in between there, and he mentions Belshazzar. And dealing with, was Belshazzar the actual king? No, Belshazzar was the son of the actual king of Babylon at that time. But Dad was away from the area so much, and these are things we can learn from secular history to help us understand the Bible more. Dad was gone too many times, so Belshazzar was kind of like the one put in charge while he was gone, and he was still referred to as king. And that's in chapter 6 we'll look at briefly. No, chapter 5, I'm sorry. And this is where we see the story of the handwriting on the wall. This was a message of the proclamation of the end of the king and his empire. Again, we'll look at that in more detail with the prophecies. Chapter 6. Now we jump ahead because the Babylonian Empire is at a close, and we find Darius the Mede is put in the position of authority in the kingdom at this point in time. And recognize back during the thing, even though Nebuchadnezzar raised Daniel to a high position, during the other kings, he may not have been in that same high position. You know, each king comes along, they forget the ones before them. What happened in the Egyptian kingdom about Joseph? The Bible tells us there came up a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. That happens. That's human nature. I don't remember that. It wasn't during my time. And it wasn't until Belshazzar, when Daniel interprets the handwriting on the wall, Belshazzar puts the royal robes on Daniel again and raises him to the level of second under him. Actually, calls him third ruler. That's what lets us know, because Belshazzar was only second ruler. His dad was the primary ruler. Daniel was put in the position of what meant that Daniel must have slipped at some point to have been raised back up again under Belshazzar. But now Darius the Mede's in here. And what does he do as far as Daniel is concerned? He said he had three governors, of whom Daniel was one. In verse 2 of chapter 6. In verse 3, this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Daniel, with his wisdom, Daniel with God in him, was standing out. Was he putting his name out on billboards to be elected? No. He didn't need to. It was during this time that we have the incident of the lion's den, and I'm not going to go into detail on that since they're ones that we know real well. But go to chapter 6, verse 25 through 27. King Darius, again, from a different nation, a different belief, with different gods and so forth, hear his words when he sees the deliverance of Daniel from the lion's den. King Darius wrote, "To all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." Again, whole different person. This is decades later after Nebuchadnezzar made his statements. But recognizing the same power of the God that Daniel worshipped and that Daniel believed in. Daniel continued to prophesy for a long period of time. How long a period of time did Daniel prophesy? How many? About 70 years. Good guess. That's right. We know that that's the 70-year time period that Jeremiah mentioned that Judah, the Jews, would be in captivity in Babylon. Before what king came along that would send them back? Cyrus. And we got to recognize, historically understand, Cyrus, Persian king, had a system within his that he would, and this is why the people were sent back to their nation, is he liked to free all the captives of Syria and Babylon and send them back to their native lands. That was his system that he used when he was a king. And so therefore, that's what fit within God's plan, and God knew that this was going to occur. How old was Daniel? Well, if we look at maybe he was even 20 when the book starts off, when he's chosen, and he was the first of the 70 years. That was the very beginning of it because he was the first one. He's maybe 90 years old, and he may have well lived into his to 100. We don't know exactly when he died. His book finishes up at a period of time. It doesn't talk about the transition back. Where do you have to go in the Bible to read about going back? You got to go back to the books of history. Yeah, remember the Bible's not chronological. Now, after we read Daniel, he's the last ones talking here at the captivity time. You got to go back to Ezra and Nehemiah and read of the people returning out of captivity going back. Let's look at some of the prophecies in the time we have left. We'll do it quickly. How many remember vivid details of your dreams? Do you wake up, husbands, do your wives wake up and just tell you all the details of their dreams, or vice versa? Because they're so vivid. How many of you wake up? I don't remember a lot of my dreams, but occasionally they do stand out when I wake up. And I think, wow, that was weird. And aren't they usually the strangest mix of all kinds of things? Daniel had a gift, as it said it was earlier, that was given to him by God. Dreams and visions. Who else was given a gift similar to him? Joseph. Joseph had dreams of his own, and he was able to interpret others' dreams. Where did those dreams come from? God. God put them there. God's interaction and communication with men. God gave this vision to Nebuchadnezzar back in chapter 2. And then he used his prophet, Daniel, to interpret. To not only interpret, but he had to actually tell Nebuchadnezzar what the dream was. Nebuchadnezzar was not a stupid ruler. Do you think he knew what his wise men had been doing all along? They were the yes men. Yes, king, whatever you want to hear. Oh, yeah, this dream means you're going to be so great and everything's going to be fantastic. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't stupid. And didn't he lay a nice set down? Did he tell them about the dream? What did he tell all his wise men? Tell me what the dream was first. And that's what the wise men wanted. Well, tell us the dream and we'll tell you. He said, no, you tell me the dream. And what was the motivation that Nebuchadnezzar gave these wise men? If you don't do it, I'll kill you and your whole families. Motivation, right? Daniel stepped up and put himself in a position, but he trusted in God and information God gave him. But he also stepped up and he saved all these wise men. You think about, were these wise men evil people that were doing? We can understand that for the most part they probably were trying to advocate false religion and false beliefs. But God didn't want them killed. Daniel could have waited until Nebuchadnezzar killed all them off. But you also got to think, what's the other thing? Where did Daniel stand at this point in time? He was considered one of the wise men, was he not? Because that's what he was 10 times wiser. So if he didn't come out, him and his friends probably would have been put to death also under Nebuchadnezzar's situation. Daniel's interpretation of this dream, and we find this as a focus. Daniel's prophecies and dreams help fill in a lot of historical knowledge and so forth that many of the other prophets didn't mention. They may have generically mentioned. Daniel gets into great details. Daniel's dream interprets earthly kingdoms that would occur over the next 600 years and brings mention of the spiritual kingdom that would never be destroyed. Daniel is prophesying generically. It seems like, Nebuchadnezzar's dream was generic. Was Daniel generic? Daniel was specific. Oh, you got the Medes and the Persians that are coming here. Later on, he talks about Greece. He talks about Rome. Daniel had facts and details that were not going to be known. Do you think he understood it? No, we find out later. Daniel was really confused. He was not understanding a lot of what he was prophesying, not realizing how much longer it was going to be way past him. Chapter 4 tells of another vision of Nebuchadnezzar. And who did he turn to because he wanted this vision? Look in verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time. This is after hearing this vision. And his thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. And Belteshazzar gave him the interpretation of this dream. In a generic, as far as this is concerned, what was the dream? And what was the interpret? Well, let's understand it better. What was Daniel's interpretation of this dream? What was going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar? Humiliation. And what was the purpose? Why was he going to be humiliated? Pride. Is pride a recurring role in the Bible we find where it comes to sin? Again and again. Pride. I did it. All the way into the New Testament when we speak of Herod. Being told he spoke like a god and he gave not God the glory. Moses' sin was because he gave not God the glory. Pride, the things that caused the greatest spiritual men in the Bible to sometimes fall. And in this situation, Nebuchadnezzar as great. Remember, how did God describe Nebuchadnezzar in that first vision of the statue? He was the head made of gold. How great he was. God gave recognition of how great Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom was. Nebuchadnezzar got puffed up. And the interpretation, as Carol said here, was he was going to become like a wild animal for a period of time. It says in verse 34, at the end of the time, this is important. Let's look at what Nebuchadnezzar, when he was restored, and it says he became as a wild animal, and the fact he was out there eating grass, his hair became so matted and long, it just looked like feathers. He looked like a wild man, and he was still the king. I think they probably put someone in charge. They enacted the proclamation of, let's put second in command up there for right now, because our king's nuts. Verse 34 of chapter 4, and at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? Nebuchadnezzar, recognizing his prideful nature, had taken him beyond where God wanted. Nebuchadnezzar was God's tool to punish who? The Jews. That had been prophesied. The Jews had sinned. Prophecy had said that this nation would come in and the Babylonians would come in and destroy them. Nebuchadnezzar was a tool. Did God let his tools step out of line? Did God allow the tools that he used to bring judgment to do whatever they wanted? No, we look at the prophecies and everything. All these other nations were going to be judged and destroyed because many of them stepped outside the bounds of being used as just punishment. They became cruel. They did things that God did not want them to do. Chapter 5, Daniel has talked about, he interpreted the handwriting on the wall. What were the four words that were up on the wall? Many, many, tikal yufarsin. Yes. There's only three words, and this is interesting because Daniel's interpretation of those words goes beyond just the word. Do you know what each word, what does many mean? Those are center column references. What? Now, all it's numbered is what the word itself means. It's like a single word, and it just means numbered. Now, it's on there twice. What does that tell you? It's important. Twice as important as the other word. It's been weighed twice. What do they say about someone who's, Dirk, how do you measure when you're building? Measure twice, cut once. That's right. They've been weighed, they've been numbered twice here. And the next step is, what is... Tekel mean? Weighed. And the final word means divided. So we have numbered, weighed, and divided. Those are three words that are popping up there. Daniel's interpretation goes into greater exposition, though, and brings the judgment against Belshazzar to the point he describes that, hey, your life is forfeited this night. Very specific. That didn't seem, well, that just says these three words. How do you get that, Daniel? Well, God gave him that knowledge. Chapter 7 through 12 was mentioned, primarily the visions and so forth that Daniel himself has, where he has interpreted other visions and things in the past. Now he is having visions. And you look at these, and it's fascinating because of these final six chapters, I think four or five of the final six chapters, their first verse has what in it? What? It's the first verse of each of these final six chapters, pretty much most of them have what? The tells when. It's the time frame. And you have to look at these because sometimes they're going to go back. Because remember, we got to the end of verse chapter 6 and we're talking about Darius the Mede. But now we're going to go back. He goes backwards and talks about Belshazzar. He tells when these visions occurred to him. So he was having these visions all throughout that earlier time. But now he's writing them down. So he wrote his book in his format here. Chapter 7 speaks of four great beasts. And the great thing, you've got to realize, Daniel goes through and gives descriptions and explanations of his... People want to take these great beasts and create all this stuff about them. I've seen movies that are made about them, about apocalyptic nature, and there are those who believe. But they're stepping outside of what Daniel himself said. Stepping outside of what the Bible says. This talks about, again, this nature, just as the statue was describing kingdoms, these beasts are describing kingdoms. And most of the nature of Daniel's rest of these chapters and visions are focused on the kingdoms and the history that are going to occur going forward. Daniel was not going to be alive during that time, but he's giving this prophecy. Why? What's the reason for him giving these prophecies? Because God told him to, yes. Are they not there for our learning? Are they not there for our faith building? That we know God was able to prophesy something hundreds of years before it would occur, and it happened exactly. We look back and it's history. At Daniel's time, it was a future event that he didn't really have all the understanding. He talked about this kingdom that would never be destroyed. Do you think he knew about the church? No, he didn't know all that stuff. But God gave him information, and it's there for us to understand how faithful our God is and how faithful he will be to us. Chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Key verses here. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heavens. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. Difficult to understand in our nature now? His prophecy is that final kingdom, just as the stone that rolled down and destroyed all the other kingdoms in the Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Here we have this final kingdom that would be greater, and that's the church. Does not Jesus refer to the church as the kingdom? Yeah. In his own teachings, that's referred. So we have a continuance here of knowledge and of thought. Chapter 8. Here we find a great focus, interesting historical reference about Greece. Who's coming after the Persians after they falter? Greece. And who is the great leader? Was he the first king? No. His father, Philip of Macedonia, was the first one. Alexander exceeded him. Again, it's funny, interesting look at this. The second king seems to be the greater when it comes to these conquering nations. And that's probably because the first one kind of leads the way and breaks the ice. So the second one comes along and has an easier method. But Alexander exceeded this, I mean, made this kingdom great, expanded it. Interesting in secular history. And this one I found as I studied when Dan had a class and we were studying, I was helping teach a couple of classes in there about between the Testaments, what occurs after Malachi up until Matthew, to the birth of Jesus, so forth. And you can read stuff from like Josephus and other historical books that give you information that took place. Do you know that when Alexander was expanding his kingdom, anybody know what he did when he came near Jerusalem? Did he destroy Jerusalem? No, he did not. Why? He was fascinated because he had heard about these prophecies of Daniel. He came to the city to actually read the scrolls that told of these prophecies about him. They fascinated him, and because of that, he did not destroy Jerusalem. That's what Josephus says in his book and so forth. Fascinating historical reference there, secular knowledge that fits in here. And again, is there a reason why God put this in Daniel, gave this vision, this description? Yeah, he wanted Jerusalem to still be around. For what purpose? What was the purpose he wanted Jerusalem to still be around? Jesus. Absolutely. Chapter 9. I've only got 5 minutes here. Daniel. This is, if you're going to read a chapter, read this one among these last ones here. Daniel, the intercession of Daniel here, the prayer that Daniel gives is so heartfelt. It shows his humility, his penitence, not only of recognizing what he feels his own sins are, even though they're never shown in his book, he never talks about them, but except he says himself, but he's praying for the sins that his nation has done. Daniel went back and read the scriptures and the stuff of Jeremiah and read those things that were occurring with Jerusalem and their sins that they were committing. And you see this descriptions here in verse 5. We have sinned and committed iniquity. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgment. Can you get more specific than that? I mean, that's Daniel is saying, we've done this wrong. He's penitently, he's really heartfelt, upset with what has taken place. And then in verses 16 through 19, he prays that God's anger comes away from them. He prays for their deliverance. Prays that he brings his people back to their place of prominence. And who appears to Daniel at this time? Gabriel. The book of Daniel is the only book in the Bible that mentions both of the named angelic or God, heavenly messengers that God sends. Only Gabriel and Michael are names given to heavenly messengers in the scripture. And Daniel's the only book that mentions both of them because they both appear to him at different times. We find in here too, towards the end of this chapter, the concept of the 70 weeks. Now, that's something you'd have to do a lot more study and research on, but understanding that God's interpretation and the way it works out, the 70 weeks was 70 times seven days in a week, every day considered a year to God. So it was 490 years he's talking about. And he helps Daniel understand later in the book here, and he gives more description. He talks about in the next chapter or two how 69 of the weeks are accounted for. He tells you what's exactly happening in each of these different kingdoms that are coming. And in that final week or 7 year time period is the situation that occurs with Messiah, with Jesus coming, dying, his kingdom being raised, and then the troubles that were going to occur to his kingdom, to the church in the future. So we only have a couple minutes left. I wish I'd go into more. Chapter 12, real quick. Phraseology here in verse 4, where he's told by Michael, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." Why was Daniel told to shut the book up? Wasn't time. That's right. Daniel, it's not for you yet. It's not going to happen during your lifetime. But he did. God did, through his visions, give Daniel comfort of knowing Jerusalem was going to return. And Jerusalem, he helped, but also he broke his heart again when he told him Jerusalem was going to be destroyed again. But he told him of this kingdom. To me, that's the greatest light here, is this kingdom that was never going to be destroyed. And that was the Daniel has some insight of the church. Verse 13, the blessing given to Daniel. The very last verse of his book. "But you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of the days." What was in store for Daniel? Yeah, he was going to have a special place. He had been a faithful servant of God, had stood there toe-to-toe with kings and told them when things were going to go bad to them without flinching. He consistently did God's will and spoke where God said to speak. And there was a faithful, and there's a place, special place for him. His inheritance. When will Daniel arise? When Christ comes again. That's when all the dead in Christ rise first. Next week will be the last three books of the Old Testament. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. What's that? Okay. Do that. Read ahead. The last three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They're not real long books. Look over those, and that way we can all, if you have questions, we can discuss them in class. And then the final class, which will be on that Wednesday, December 2nd, will be about Jesus the prophet. To me, the most key class of this whole study. Thank you very much.